in the book. J. Edgar Hoover accused him of being a public menace. He's been blacklisted. He's done time for refusing to discuss his political association. And he's probably the most picketed, most boycotted musician in U.S. history. In his 75 years, he's been rich and he's been dirt poor, but he's never been without his beloved five-string banjo, and his voice has never stopped ringing out songs of freedom and songs of justice. Songs like If I Had a Hammer, Turn, 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 and Where Have All the Flowers Gone? These days, he's preparing for a spring concert tour with his old friend Arlo Guthrie. He's at home on the same land he and his family cleared along the Hudson River in New York, and that's where we caught up with him.
You were recently given the Kennedy Center Award, one of the highest honors America can bestow on its artists, and I just wonder, seeing you there, is here was a government honoring you, and yet it was the same government that tried to put you in jail for 10 years. You were kept off radio and television in the United States. I guess the irony of all that crossed your mind?
Life is full of ironies. I have to laugh. I was protected from my present situation all my life by being a radical people were scared to get in touch with. Now people aren't scared to get in touch with me. I'm drowned in mail, suffocated by honors, and my wife and I look at each other and say, how do we get out of this trap we're in? Better to go back to the blacklist days. Actually, the blacklist is something that I've lived with all my life. My father was fired from a good job in the University of California because he felt that the First World War was an imperialist war, and he felt more like a pacifist. And he got me into radical politics back in the dirty 30s.
Right.
And in 1942, I believe, Woody Guthrie, the fellow who wrote This Land Is Your Land, he and I and a few others actually did get on network radio once. The next day a headline said, Commie Folk Singers Try to Infiltrate Radio. And that was the last job we got.
It lasted up until the late 60s when you were booked on the Smothers Brothers show.
That's right. For about 17 years, I couldn't get on network TV. I did get on local TV. I'd be singing at some college, and I'd knock on the door of the local station and say, I'm singing at the college tonight. Could I say a few words in between you playing some records or whatever? And they said, oh, yeah, we remember Goodnight Irene. Come on. And I'd speak for 3 or 4 minutes, and I'd be on my way. A few minutes later, they'd get an angry phone call. Why did you let that communist so-and-so on your airwaves? But it was too late. I called it cultural guerrilla tactics. I carried on for 20 or 30 years.
What was it about your politics? You use the word radical. Radical means to go to the root of something. What was it that made it such a frightening specter for so many Americans?
Well, there were a large number of people who, when the Russian Revolution came along, felt that this was going to be the beginning of the end or something. And, as you know, the USA did not recognize the Soviet Union for about 15 years. And even then, when Hitler came along, a lot of people said, oh, this is the way to take care of the communists. We'll build up Hitler, and he'll go and attack Stalin, and we'll finish them both off. Of course, Hitler pulled a dirty trick and started invading France and England. And communists did the same thing. Stalin pulled the rug out from under him and signed a non-aggression pact, said, you're going to sick him on me, I'll sick him on you. And I was foolish enough to go along with it. I was singing peace songs in the year of 1940 and 41. Right. Woody Guthrie made up a funny song. Why do you stand there in the rain? Why? A bunch of students had gone down and stood on the White House lawn, and Roosevelt gave them a speech in the rain. It was a very scolding speech. He said, you're still wet behind the ears. You should know that we've got to help out Britain and so on.
Right.
Woody wrote a funny song about it. I printed it in my book. Oh, they tell me they've got lands where they will not let you stand in the rain and ask for jobs upon the lawn. Thank God in the USA you can stand there every day, but I would not guarantee they'd take you on. It was a march asking for jobs for youth, and instead of spending money on war, wanting jobs for youth. This has been the continual complaint, you know, of people. How come we got money for bombs and planes and guns, but we don't have money for hospitals and schools and so on?
There are some people, in the, some commentators in the U.S. who sense an echo of the blacklist times, the McCarthy times now, with conservative control of Congress. People have lumped liberalism in with the counterculture and said they're both dead. Do you sense what you used to call an unpleasant, irrational voice moving through the country again?
It's been going on a long time. It's just a new tack, a very clever tack, I might say.
Uh-huh.
And they picked on one of the big weaknesses of the Communist Party in picking out that phrase, political correctness, because the Communist Party did use that term, and they just turned it upside down and fired it back on them. Now the way they handle people who would like to get a sensible word in edgeways, they don't ban them. No, you can say anything you want. They just drown them out.
Huh. Do we do that in the media, do you think, Pete?
I'm convinced that it's a bad habit of the media. But when I meet people in the media who tells me, look, we're in business like you are. We have to sell newspapers. We have to get listeners and viewers, or else we're out of business. And I look them right in the eye and say, yeah, so does cocaine. Would you sell that?
Right.
And they're usually silent. And I answered, tell me, will you answer that question? Would you sell cocaine if they'd let you? Answer. Answer.
Yeah.
These guys know that if they would, it was allowed, they would sell anything that makes money.
And at the moment, it would seem, certainly an official America, Washington, conservatism is selling, and selling big.
Well, the word conservatism is a joke, too. My father used to say, the truth is a rabbit in a bramble patch. All you can do is circle around and say it's somewhere in there. But the word conservatism has been really turned upside down also. I'm basically a conservative myself, you know. Most people who call themselves conservatives, they'd like to turn the clock back to the days when there was no income tax. They'd like to go back. They're conservative.
Right.
That's about the only thing they're conservative about. They don't mind coming into a town with a lot of bulldozers and turning everything upside down. Me, I sincerely would like to turn the clock back to the days when people lived in small villages and we took care of each other. Life was shorter, harder, dangerous. But we took care of each other, and we wouldn't be wondering, as many of us are now, if there is going to be a human race in 100 years. It's not just the air is going to go, and the water is going to go, the forests will go, all sorts of things will go wrong.
I wonder if the soul is going to go.
Well, in many ways, I think soul has gone in countries like the USA.
Yeah.
When people know that there are starving people in the world, and they say, well, let them watch out for themselves. I watch out for myself. Now I got two cars.
When you said that in an earlier time people lived in smaller communities and took care of one another, they also sang to each other, didn't they?
Exactly. I have to confess, is another way I'm conservative. I would love to see a world where people sing at the kitchen table or sing when they go on a journey, whether it's walking or riding. I'd like to see people making up songs. As a matter of fact, that's my main purpose in life, to persuade people that it's fun to make music and fun to make up songs. And when they say, well, I can't write a song, that takes skill, I say, well, do what Woody Guthrie did. He'd take over an old song and change a few words. And before you know it, he had a new verse. Now, if you've done that for a few years, you find you can make up more than just a verse.
Can I be impertinent enough to ask you if you have your banjo there?
Oh, I got banjo and guitar, always handy.
Is the banjo, is it the one with the inscription around the bell?
Yeah. It says, this machine surrounds hate and forces it to surrender.
Could you surround us with something, Pete?
I don't have much voice left. Can I play you a tune on the banjo?
Anything at all.
One of my favorite tunes.
It's called
the Coal Creek March, and it comes from eastern Tennessee 100 years ago.
Wonderful.
Just exactly 100 years ago.
Wonderful. That's wonderful. The other night, I listened to an interview done by Alan Lomax with Arlo Guthrie, way back, I think, when Arlo was in his late 20s. And listening to his voice and the way he talked and his experiences, I can't hear those voices today. And aside from yourself, where are those authentic American voices coming from in music today?
Well, you won't hear them on the AM radio. You won't hear them on TV much. But they are all around, believe me. There are now thousands, for all I know, tens of thousands of people making up songs like Woody did. And some of them are great songs. Some of them are printed in that little magazine, Sing Out.
Right.
Comes out 4 times a year with about 20 or more songs in it. And some of them get put in other little folknick magazines here or there. Many of them never get printed, but they get put on a tape somewhere, and when the singer sings at a coffee house, they'll have copies of their tapes to sell. And there's, as I say, there's not hundreds or thousands, I think there's tens of thousands. It's all around the world. People have got the idea, and it's a good idea, that instead of listening to a speech, better listen to a song. And sometimes you don't have to have many words. As a young woman in the Hudson Valley where I live, Pat Humphreys by name, and she attended a songwriting workshop. And the leader of the workshop had pointed out, you know, some of the old spirituals just changed one word, and you get a new verse. So she made up a verse, a song, "We'll keep on walking forward. We'll keep on walking forward. Keep on walking forward. Never turning back, never turning back. We'll teach our neighbors courage. We'll teach our neighbors courage. Teach our neighbors courage. Never turning back, never turning back." And so on. It can go on for a long time once you get a crowd singing this. It's like a spiritual. The song is spread all around the English-speaking world.
Is that how you came to create If I Had a Hammer and Turn, 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 that kind of thing?
Well, Lee Hayes, he was the son of a Methodist preacher in Arkansas, and he knew these old songs.
Right.
And he's the one who made up the words, If I Had a Hammer, sent them to me in January 1949. Said, "Pete, can you put a tune to this?" And I put a tune, but it wasn't as good a tune as it might have been. Some people still sing it the way I wrote it. All over this land. But about 8 or 9 years later, a younger bunch of singers, Peter, Paul, and Mary, changed my tune a bit, and the song went around the world.
Absolutely.
It's been recorded by dozens of people. And it's played in many languages and many countries. You know, that's what pays my taxes now. I wouldn't need to earn a penny. That song manages to pay my insurance and my taxes every year.
I did get a little nervous when Trini Lopez recorded it, though.
Oh, well, there's always the danger. Somebody will make a happy-go-lucky song out of it. And they can try, but it's hard to. Johnny Cash sung just the first three verses. He didn't sing the last verse, saying, "It's the hammer of justice, it's the bell of freedom, song about love between my brothers and my sisters." What I do is I guess a crowd singing it, and I'm most proud that I have not sung this song in 20 years. All I do is sing the first line, and from there on I line out the hymns they used to say in church. I say, "Hammer of justice," they sing that line.
Yeah. Everybody knows the words.
Yeah. Well, same way with "Where Have All the Flowers Gone" and "Turn, Turn, Turn." I'll give the words to an audience, and they'll sing it. If there's anybody listening who's heard me in the last few years, they'll know that I usually sing with my grandson, who's got a good voice, and I'm the fellow who lines out the hymn.
Just a word or two about the Weavers. It's so extraordinary to think of the music that you did in that time, and then kind of disappeared, and then came back for that incredible reunion and so on. Was the Weavers your idea, or how did all of that come to be?
Actually, I think it was Lee Hayes. Uh-huh. He was a kind of a genius. He wanted to do things right. Doggone it, if he couldn't do it right, he didn't want to do them at all. I thought he was cantankerous all his life long, but now he's dead, I'm convinced he was a kind of a genius. And he was based in the Almanac Singers that sang together before World War II. Woody Guthrie and Millard Lampell and Bess Hawes and Sis Cunningham and Lee and me and others, we sang for trade unions, labor unions, back in 1941 and 42. After the war, I was raising a family, Woody was raising a family. We only got together occasionally, but Lee said, "Pete, what would you think of forming a group which would actually, perish the thought, rehearse?" And I reluctantly agreed. Arlo usually kids me. He says, "Pete always cautions people, don't rehearse too much." But we did rehearse. Well, the main thing, we found of a glorious alto singer named Ronnie Gilbert.
Incredible.
Who's still singing around.
She was doing we talked to her, she was doing a one-woman show on Mother Harris, on Mother Jones.
Mother Jones, yeah.
Yeah. Where did Fred Hellerman come on?
Well, he, like Ronnie, was kind of a teenager in New York when he heard this country music, but he fell in love with it himself. And after he got out of the U.S. Coast Guard in the 40s, he came around to sing at the Hootenannies, and he had a real good voice, and he was a sharp musician. I mean, right now he's composing symphonies with the help of his computer.
Wow.
He's a very good musician. So Fred, Ronnie, Lee, and me formed a quartet. We were about to split up, though. We hadn't been able to get any jobs. Unions thought we were a bunch of lefties and didn't want us to have anything to do with us. But I was dissatisfied singing on my own. I knew there's some songs that a soloist literally cannot sing right. "Saints Go Marching In," you need that answer back. Oh, when the saints go marching in, go marching in. I said, I want to sing with a group, and as a last desperate resort, fate worse than death, I said, let's get a job at a nightclub. I don't drink, I don't smoke, don't like staying up late, but I went to a little dive in Greenwich Village called the Village Vanguard. I'd once sung there on my own for a couple of weeks, and he'd wanted me to come back, but I said, no, Max, I'm not interested in singing in a nightclub. But I went back to him. I said, Max Gordon, would you hire a quartet? He said, no, I don't want a quartet. I'll hire you. I said, well, you paid me all of $200 a week to sing for you. Would you take a quartet if they only charged you $200 a week? That was low pay even then.
Wow.
He laughed. He says, well, I guess I can't turn that down. So we started working for Max Gordon at $200 a week and free hamburgers. About a month later, he came in and saw the size of the hamburgers we were making and how many of them we were eating every night. He said, let's make that $250 a week, but no more free hamburgers. And then in comes a guy who says, I'm Gordon Jenkins. I work at Decca Records. I think you're wonderful. And he got us up there for an audition. Well, I didn't know who Jenkins was. I don't listen to pop music. don't listen now and didn't listen then. But people said, oh, he's an important man in the music business. Well, the audition did not take place. The head of Decca Records knew me. He knew I was a lefty. He took one look. He said, oh, these guys aren't commercial. And he walked out, refused to stay for the audition. And everybody else was embarrassed and drifted away, except Gordon. Gordon Jenkins whispered in my ear, he says, I'll get you on my next session. I couldn't tell him who to hire. So there was Gordon Jenkins' orchestra with the Weavers singing Irene Goodnight.
And that was it.
It was the biggest selling record since World War II.
Yeah.
Stayed up number one week after week after week after week after week after week. I was in a diner and somebody said, turn that jukebox off. I've heard that song 50 times today.
A lot of what the Weavers were about had come out of a kind of collective spirit in the U.S., and it had to do with hope and fear and unions and capital and so on. Does that spirit exist today in the U.S.? I'm thinking, in November, what, 37% of the people voted. I mean, does anybody care anymore?
Aha, that's the key. What were those other 60% doing? A lot of them are like the singer Utah Phillips. Do you know him?
Yeah.
Wonderful singer. He goes around with a little button saying, don't vote, it just encourages them. I don't know, maybe he's right. But I see the big story since the 1960s is something the media doesn't quite know what to do with, because it's no one big story. It's many, many small stories. You don't find big marches in Washington anymore.
That's right.
But you find lots of little things going on in every community in the country. And I bet it's going on in Canada, too. And I'm now quite convinced that if there's a world here in 100 years, it's going to be saved not by any one big organization of any sort. No big political group, no big church, no big movement. It's going to be saved by millions upon millions upon millions of little organizations. It just might be that what Jesus and Jeremiah and Muhammad and Buddha and a lot of other people talked about just might come true. We might start treating each other decently. Because we have to. If we don't treat each other decently, there will be no human race.
I thank you so much for talking to us tonight. It's a great pleasure. Could you play us something just here at the end?
Well, I'll play or a little thing on the guitar called Living in the Country. And as people can play it much better than I do, Leo Kottke does this at lightning speed. I play it kind of medium slow. And my grandson usually, you'd be amused, he plays an electric guitar along with me with a nice little melody, which I used to whistle. I call it Living in the Country.
Thank you so much for being with us, Pete. Thanks so much. Bye.
Pete Seeger from his homestead on the Hudson River in New York.